The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Bel Air, the official podcast, is produced by iHeart Podcast Network and Peacock.
Hey, we are back with episode 6 of Bel Air, the official podcast. I am DJ Jazzy Jeff.
And I'm Crystal West. I just have to say, I am so honored and excited to be hosting this show with you. I'm really into this Bel Air iteration, and we just watched the 8th episode. Listen, drama. I mean, we had fights, we had reconciliations. What'd you think about the episode?
Listen, there was so much realism in this, especially the sisters digging up old wounds. You know, you saw tension earlier. You know, you knew it was something there, but you kind of got a little bit more context about why they have pretty much been at each other's throat. And this was the eruption.
Yeah, we sort of saw the Banks family as being this unbreakable unit before. This episode, we see that there are real fractures. You know, the family is not always this tight fist, and everybody's dealing with different challenges. There's just a lot going on in this episode, and we're getting more into the family and the fatherhood themes.
Yeah, I love the Carlton and Will dynamic of them starting to kind of figure out their relationship and, you know, it not be so much tension between them two, but then you have the tension between the two sisters. Question, did you have a favorite scene in this?
Oof, it's hard to say. Yeah. I think we'll be talking about that fight between Vi and Viv, and then Viv actually reaching out to Vi and them talking about it and being able to squash it.
You're always the strong one looking out for me. And I'm so sorry for seeing past that. Can you ever forgive me? Yes, of course, you're my sister. Besides, I can't pin all my disappointments on you. You know, I made my choices, and one of them was Lou. I'm sorry I didn't listen to you. I'm sorry that I held it against you all these years.
It was super important, not just for the sisters, but also because Carlton and Will needed to see that a lack of communication, holding on to grudges, not really saying how you feel or being honest about it, not asking for help, not reaching out. Those things can all create a rift in the family where you don't really talk and you're not as close as you could be for years and years.
Yeah.
And so Carlton and Will needed to see that play out like that at Will's birthday party in order to get to a place of being like, okay, well, this
This can't be it.
Yeah. You know, the kids being the catalyst for the two of them to reconcile was beautiful. Yes, it was.
It really was. Well, today we'll be talking about the themes of family and fatherhood. One thing that's really different about this new version of the show is there's a lot of tension in the family.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. They're not that unbreakable unit anymore. We even see with Hillary, who has kind of always had Phil's support and he's always backed her, been down for whatever she wants to do. Even she now is seeing that, like, you know, that support is not actually unconditional. Mm-hmm. And if daddy don't like something, he gonna say it.
Yeah.
And even Viv stepping in to be like, you know, you want to be Thotty Chef or whatever, that's your business. But is it something you actually care about? Is it something that matters to you? And then with Carlton, a similar situation where he's dealing with so much pressure to be the perfect son, to be the perfect athlete, to do all the things he thinks he's supposed to do because of what his parents have provided for him, and yet having all this internal turmoil that really comes out in his interactions with his family. It's been part of the reason why he's been so upset with Will. It's part of his resentment towards his father, with the clear difference in treatment that he and Will both get. So we're seeing the family kind of start to shake loose a little bit.
And plus, there's a lot of tension and a lot of mystery around Will's father, Lou.
Listen.
Now Lou has come up.
It's the last thing that either one of us needs right now, but we potentially have a much bigger issue. Vi is considering telling Will about Lou.
You're fucking kidding me.
I advised her against it.
Good. Because it's a horrible idea.
Well, yeah, it's horrible for us, but I mean, Will deserves to know the truth about his dad.
Yeah, someday, yeah. But on his 17th birthday, no. Listen, Viv, we gotta stand together on this one.
Phil, he's gonna find out about it one day. And the longer we keep him in the dark, the worse it'll be for all of us.
There's some mystery going on with Lou. I know he left Will and Vi when they were young, or he was young, but it seems like Phil and Viv know something. Somebody knows something about Lou.
Oh, yeah.
Lou got some bones somewhere that everybody's trying to figure out what's going on. And it's something that they don't want Will to know about.
Right, absolutely. When Vi brought up telling Will the truth about Lou, and Viv was like, he might hate us. I said, oh, wait a minute, skirt.
Yeah. Wait a minute. What happened? Hate is a big word.
Right. And so at first I thought, oh, man, I done chopped this man up. But evidently Lou is still alive. So now I'm like, OK, what did y'all do? I need to know. And I'm hoping, fingers crossed, that we'll find out this season. But I am so excited to talk to today's guests and get their takes on this modern day Banks family. Today we are talking to Jabari Banks, who plays Will, and Cassandra Freeman, who plays Aunt Viv. Jabari, like his character and Will Smith before him, is from West Philly and studied musical theater at Philadelphia's University of the Arts. This is his very first on-screen role. Meanwhile, Cassandra is a Florida-born actress who's performed in film, television, and theater. Some of her best-known roles include Shelley Wayne on the drama Blue Bloods and, more recently, Jasmine on The Last OG. Cassandra got her MFA at NYU's Tisch School of the Arts and lives in Brooklyn. Two of my favorite characters, so very excited to have these actors join us.
Yeah, I'm so excited to talk to both of them about the theme, because it seems to be tight, like family, on and off screen.
Yeah,
so
they do.
I'm excited to find out.
All right. Well, let's not delay any further. Here is our conversation with Jabari Banks. So Jabari, thank you so much for being here. What has it been like for you to have your first on-screen role be so iconic, to be stepping in Will Smith's shoes, to get the call from Will Smith? Like, talk to us about it.
Right. Yo, first of all, thank you for having me. You know, I'm super excited to be here to talk with you all. And, you know, stepping into these shoes is a huge honor. There definitely was a wait, but, you know, I felt like I had to bring myself to this role and to really embody the character. I had to, you know, bring my experiences and bring my instincts, you know, and it was an amazing opportunity to get the call from Will. You know, he passed the torch, and the fact that he was like, man, I'm going to be to you what Quincy Jones was to me. My heart was like, Oh my God. What a sentence, right? And to be able to step into that legacy and bring myself to it and be celebrated, not only from the family and from, you know, the production, but by the world. You know, there's so much love around the project now, and that's super exciting. And I'm so blessed, you know?
Well, I have to say, I am blown away by your portrayal. And, you know, I kind of have a little bit of a deeper inside look than most.
Yeah. Right.
Because I remember how all of this started. I remember Will and I sitting on the steps and him saying, I want to be the biggest movie star in the world. So to watch all of that, you know, come to fruition has been nothing but a joy for me.
Yeah.
But to watch you, man, I'm like this. I've been telling people that this is a Twilight Zone moment for me because I'm on the outside watching this story happen again, almost like it happened the first time. And you are doing an incredible job, man. Like, and I have to say kudos. I needed to say that. I'm curious to know, like, what have you taken from Will to your approach to the character? How much of it is Will? How much of it is Jabari? What's the difference in the two?
You know, I feel like there is a lot of Jabari. There is a lot of Will. You know what I mean? It's 50% Jabari, 50% Will. It's like there's so many parallels between my life and the character's life. When we're out there in the pilot looking over Mulholland Drive, and Will is like, man, this is crazy. And it's his first time up there. That's Jabari's first time up there as well. And so there's been so many parallels between my life and what this character is going through. Mm-hmm. But as far as what I, you know, some of the mannerisms that I, you know, took from the original character, you know, whether that be the swaying when he gets sort of emotional, or the lips, you know what I mean? Or there's something in the eyes, you know? You know,
yeah.
You know when he starts doing the lip thing?
You know, I know that.
Right. Exactly. You know, so those are slight mannerisms that I definitely had to throw in there, you know, just as a nod to the original. And I think that is a testament to the collaboration of Morgan Cooper and the rest of the team, where it's like, they're huge collaborators and they've been throwing, you know, little small hints to the original as well. And I think that's why it feels so familiar to a lot of people.
Definitely does. I have to say, as somebody who was a kid in the 90s when the first Fresh Prince came out, to see you portray Will, you have so many of those mannerisms and just like small little details that just have me going like, damn, is this like Will's secret kid or something? Like, how is this boy so good? But there's definitely more tension in this version of the Banks family than there was in the original one. And to be honest, Will is a source of a lot of that tension. So what are you exploring or hoping to portray through you and this character and the tension that he brings to the house?
Will is he's a fish out of water. The tension surrounding his whole situation when it comes to his family and his mother and his father in comparison to the Banks family, and, you know, the tension between those two families, one living in LA, one living in Philly, and, you know, different class statuses. There's definitely a lot of tension surrounding the whole situation. But I feel that Will, what's happening in his life, it affects everyone around him. And it takes him some time to recognize that through, you know, lessons from Uncle Phil and teachings. He kind of learns that everything's not always about him. And, you know, growing up with, you know, a single mom, that can it can feel like that's the case. You know, you get a lot of attention. And, you know, having a brother and two sisters now, he has to learn how to survive and thrive in this world, you know, but also, like, keeping the family intact.
Now, one of the things that I've realized is there's a little East Coast and West Coast thing going on with the Smiths that, you know, the East Coast and West Coast Smiths haven't really been seeing each other for about 10 years. Some because Vi was hurt and resentful that Aunt Viv didn't come back to Philly to help take care, you know, their sick mother. But we also see Phil kind of being advised to, you need to get your family in check if he wants any kind of political career or future. How do you think loyalty and unity collide when you're trying to stay true and pursuing your dreams?
That is such a good question, because I feel like we touch on the topic of what does it look like to be successful in Black and to climb that ladder, but also stay in contact and stay in touch with where you come from. That's so important. And that's the push and pull between the Vi character and the Viv character. And we see that come to life in that dynamic. There's a lot of questions that we pose. You know, I'm still trying to figure it out myself, because honestly, I'm going through that situation in my life right now, you know?
Yeah.
Very real for someone who, you know, who's ambitious and is finally, you know, kind of getting to that point of their success that you can kind of look back and go, oh, dang, you know what I mean? There's a lot of people back there like, you know, you should come do this and you should come do that for the church, because, you know, there's a lot. And I think through this show, I have had the opportunity to talk with Morgan Cooper and to talk with Will about the difference between paying it forward and giving back, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's a huge conversation, not only for us as Black people, but, you know, for anyone who is successful in their career or is gaining success, you know?
Well, like I said, I often feel like there are so many third worlds when it comes down to this is something that Will and I had to deal with. Mm-hmm. This is a portrayal of what Will and I had to play on the show, but mm-hmm. this is something that we had to deal with in real life. And it really seems like it's the exact same thing with you.
Yeah. And it's so amazing. I already knew when I got, you know, the call for this role, you know what I'm saying? Like, I knew that it was aligned, some sort of alignment in my life, aligned with this project. And my mom always told me and instilled in me, like, you know, what's for you is for you. And when it's going to come, it's going to come. You just got to be ready when it comes. You know what I mean? I kept that in my mind. And I was like, man, this is something about this project was aligned in my life. And as soon as I read the script, I was like, oh, this has something to say.
Yep, definitely. This iteration of Bel-Air portrays different versions of family. We have, you know, Will and Vi in their two-person family. We have, obviously, the two-parent, multi-child Banks family. We even see the extended family when the sisters come together. All the cousins are together. How do you think making that move from, like you said earlier, just being up under his mom all the time, being the one who got all the attention and kind of like fully doted on, to going to this brand new environment with the Banks family. How do you think living with a father figure and a family larger than just him and his mom impacts Will?
That father figure is huge for a young man growing up, and and to not have that and to suddenly get this wave of authority that was not there before, it's definitely jarring. And so Will is trying to figure out how to adapt, not only, you know, living with the whole family, but with Uncle Phil, who is constantly on his back. It feels in the beginning where it's like, man, this guy is constantly, I can't get it right. What did I do this time? He's always calling me into his office. What's going on? And that's something that I could really resonate with, you know? I was fortunate enough to have my father in my life. I grew up with a lot of kids who didn't. And so I could resonate with Will, and I understand where his mind is at when it comes to that. Because, it, you know, authority is something that Will struggles with. We see that in the pilot with, you know, with its interaction with the police. And you know, and he's a very prideful young man. And so he's definitely learning how to adapt and how to coexist in this environment with these new figures in his life. But I think, you know, we get to see the dynamic and his progression as not only a young man, but, you know, as a brother and as a nephew and as a son. And that's going to be super exciting and recognizable. And it's going to resonate with a lot of people.
So I also see that your character is starting to desire to know more about his dad. I'm curious to know, why do you think he's asking these questions? Do you think it's because he's older? Do you think it's because his mom opened the door to the questions, you know, about his father? How much does that have to do with the fact that he is now has a father figure in Uncle Phil in his life?
I think that has a lot to do with it. You know, Uncle Phil being there, it's like, this is a great father. I see how fathers are supposed to be. Where is mine? You know, and don't I deserve a father? And it's something that he struggles with day to day. There are moments where he looks to Uncle Phil and he sees what could have been in his life. And so he, you know, he, and constantly when he's asking his mom about his father, she's constantly, you know, backtracking. She's constantly pushing it to the side. She's constantly sweeping it under the rug. And so, you know, he's like, look, I'm 17 now. You know, let me figure out who my father is. Let me find out who he is. Let me at least know his name. What do I look like him? Facial features, something, you know, and he left when he was four. And so, you know, not having that in his life has left a big hole in who he is and his identity. And so he's seeking to gain that back.
Yeah. Which is, you know, super real, especially for people who have, you know, grown up in that environment, that for things to change as quickly as they have for Will, and for him to already be at such a tumultuous age, you know, these teenagers are already dealing with a lot. And we see a very different side, speaking of teenagers, to Will and Carlton's relationship after Vi and Viv have their fight at the birthday party. And honestly, I was shocked that Carlton and Will kind of both had the emotional intelligence to be like, you know what? What we don't need to do is be beefing like this.
Look, after seeing our moms today, I can honestly say I have no intention of having a decades-long grudge with you all.
Me either. But I don't know how we can move forward if you can't accept the fact that I'm with Lisa now.
All right, this isn't just about Lisa. All right, you coming here sent me into a spiral. I was already having a rough time at school, getting good grades and leading my lacrosse team to state championships. And my parents needed me to be basically fucking perfect, all right? It's exhausting.
Then you just show up and hook up with my ex?
So, me being with Lisa is the straw that broke the camel's back.
Exactly. You just strolled up in here and my parents loved you. The girls at school pretty much couldn't get enough of you. And it's like everything that I had to work really hard for, you just had without even trying.
I hear you. So basically what you're saying is you're a hater.
Y'all, I'm playing. I'm joking. I feel you. I get you.
Exactly. For our whole lives.
Decades. Right.
Exactly. Right. And you know, it's definitely an outside looking in situation where they're like, okay, these are two women that we love dearly. Let's put our differences aside so that we can help our family come back together. And I think that's so beautiful for people to watch, to see a family love each other and then fall apart and come back together again. That sort of imagery is everything right now, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's what we need.
Can you talk a little bit more about how the fight impacts Will and Carlton's relationship and Will's feelings towards his cousin? I mean, he is dating his cousin's ex. You know, you would think he would be a little bit more humble, but
yeah. There's a lot of girls in L.A. Like, you had to pick that one?
Ain't no black girls at Bel Air Academy.
Yeah, okay, you're right.
When it comes to Will and Carlton's relationship, I think at this point, they're like, we understand that we have differences. We understand that we don't understand. You know what I mean? We know that we get that we don't know each other. We understand that we have totally different upbringings, right? And that's clear through my mom being there and through Aunt Viv being there. We hear the stories of how our family is disjointed. There's a moment, I feel, where something clicks, where they're like, we need to put this aside because there's a bigger cause. There's a bigger issue happening in our family. I feel like we are now beginning to see the camaraderie that we all know and love between Will and Carlton grow.
It's crazy because I also realized in the scene with Carlton and Phil in the golf course, you know, it seems like Carlton's perception is justified at the fact that he's treated different. It's a little bit different. It's, you know, Uncle Phil is a lot more easier on Will than he is on Carlton. Mm-hmm. Can you speak to the dynamics between Phil and the two boys? You know, one being a father and son and one being uncle and nephew.
Yeah, it's very real. Carlton is totally valid. You know what I mean? For feeling the way he feels.
Yes.
And I think that's the perspective that this show gives on the character Carlton that we needed. You know, and, you know, Will and Phil's dynamic is totally different. Phil understand where Will comes from. Phil understand that Will hasn't had a father figure in his life. Phil understands where Will is in his life. Carlton, you know, has grown up with a father his whole life, you know, fortunate enough, you know, and Phil understands that. And, you know, there's something about when you have a kid and you understand their potential. You know what I mean? You're like, I see the potential in Carlton. So that's why, you know, maybe he goes a little harder on Carlton, or why his expectations for Carlton is a little higher, you know, and he's trying to get Will to that same level of excellence, and Will needs a little bit more love, you know? And I feel like that's where the difference lies between Phil and Will and Phil and Carlton's relationship. And Carlton doesn't understand that at first, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Carlton's
like
he's used to being the only boy. You know, being, me and dad time, me and daddy time. And so when Will comes in and he's boisterous, his energy is everything. And you know, he lights up the room and Phil is like, man, that kid is special. You know, Carlton, there's definitely moments of jealousy. But I feel like as Carlton realizes Will's situation, you know, and everything that's going on in his life, he comes to an understanding of who this young man is. And, you know, that's everything. It's understanding, you know? When you can understand, like, the full, not even the full, this full spectrum, but maybe even 50% of who a person is, then you understand why they move the way they do. You know what I mean? And why they make the decisions that they make. But that just takes time, you know?
I have a two-part question, and this is special to me. What is the importance of Philly to you? And what was the best advice that you got from Will? Because trust me, listen, Will's been my partner for 30-something years, and he is always dropping gems and jewels. So I know he gave you some.
Yo, the importance of Philly to me, man, I feel like Philly is the place where I found myself. Philly is the place where I found who I was. You know what I mean? And through the city and through the drive, it was like, man, I remember there was a moment where I actually auditioned for Charlie Mack. He was creating a boy band, I didn't make the cut, man. And I was like, oh, that I was right there, man. I feel like moments like that, you know, and just being with artists in the city, it drove me, you know, and to go harder, to be harder, you know what I mean? And so to be able to bring that to the screen and to actually be in the community, you know, we was on 60th and Market, you know, shooting the first scene, you know what I mean? So it's, we're right there, you understand it? And so it's super, super important to the story of Will, but also to me in general, you know, going back home and seeing all the love that the city has brought to me and to the whole project is super, 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 super beautiful. And, you know, we got a mural up in the Philadelphia airport that is, you know, it's amazing. So like, it's an incredible, incredible feeling. You know what I mean? To walk around the streets where you used to, you know, you used to walk around and now I'm filming there. They shut the streets down. You know what I'm saying? And it's really wild. It's really actually crazy. And, you know, as far as Will, man, a lot of gems, man. And that goes without saying, but on that very first call that we had, he was just like, man, there's going to be a lot of ups in your career. This is a big up and there's going to be a lot of downs. You know what I mean? But don't let the successes get to your head. Don't let the failures get to your heart. And that is a big one that I've taken with me. You know, right now I feel like I'm on top of the world. You know what I mean? And tomorrow that wheel is going to keep turning. That wheel is going to keep turning. And you know, the work might not be there, but keep going and keep pushing and keep creating the opportunities for other kids that are coming up like me. And that's what's so important to me about this whole project, man. It's like Morgan Cooper made this trailer.
Yes.
And Will saw it and he wasn't like, nah, we not touching that. Will was like, yo, I'm going to give this kid a chance. Like, let's see where we can take this and look what's come of it. You know what I mean? And Will has paid it forward to Morgan and Will has paid it forward to me and Morgan has paid it forward to me. And so I hope that I could take, excuse my language. I know that I'm going to take this energy that they've given me and pay it forward to the next person. And, you know, there's what we're doing right now is so important. And, you know, the original Fresh Prince of Bel-Air is lightning in a bottle. We can't really touch that. And so the fact that we flipped this thing on its head and, you know, people are showing so much love to it. We hope that we can create the same iconic, you know, style of show that the Fresh Prince had in the 90s and the impact that it had in the 90s. And so that's what I hope comes out of this project for sure.
Wow, what a great conversation with this incredible young talent, Jabari Banks. I am just so impressed by this young man. Like I said during the interview, he is so, so good at this. All right, let's get right into our interview with Cassandra Freeman. She plays the iconic Aunt Viv. I was just saying before we got started that I am so incredibly impressed with your portrayal of this character. Can you talk to us a little bit about how you felt when you got the call to play Aunt Viv?
Just, you know, disbelief. It's so funny about life. You have dreams, but you don't even realize that there's some things that'll be on the buffet for choosing, and you ain't even know it's gonna be that guy. You're like, I've been looking at this menu. This been over there too. So, I mean, I always like to tell people, like, I didn't even want to audition for this role. And then when I had the interview with Rashid, the showrunner, and Morgan, the creator, I was just like, this is so sweet. They just want to talk to me. I was like, they're not going to give me this role. This is sweet. So I really just took it as an opportunity to speak into the life of Morgan, who is a new creator in the Hollywood game, at least. And I just wanted to tell him who I thought he was in this industry, which is, you know, he has his own special fire on the inside. And I just felt like it was my responsibility to be like, listen, you the new answer to the Spike Lee, Ryan Coogler, you know, Bradford Young. He's an auteur. And so I just took the time to tell him that. And by the end of that conversation, I remember my husband was like, how did that go? And I said, you know, I don't know, but I got to tell him what I thought. Okay.
Wow.
That's wild.
Yeah. Because I have to tell you, like I told all the other cast members, that the first time that I saw this, I thought that this was the greatest selection of a cast that I've ever seen on a television show. Mm. You were born to play this role. Like it almost seemed like you made the role and then told them that you were going to play it. but I realized that you said that Janet Hubert, you know, one of the actresses that played Aunt Viv in a 90s show, made you feel like it was your birthright to take the space up and be excellent.
You know, it's a funny thing about being African-American in America. You know, you get a lot of people who ask, you know, questions about, like, did you see yourself reflected? I saw myself, certain aspects of myself reflected growing up, but never the full spectrum of who I am. And that was one reason why I wanted to be an actress, is that I kept thinking, maybe America don't know that they're like Black women who are like so much bigger than just this small thing that they keep shoving in my face over and over again. And I feel like being a Black little girl most of the times, and even a Black woman, yo, let's be honest, I feel like to be the Black woman, even more so even the Black man, because if you're a man or a young man in school, if you're an athlete or even a musician, you might get some elevation and some shine. But if you're a woman, it's like they, at least my experience and most of the women I know around me, you still get overlooked. You never are special. And if you're a darker skin, you're sort of like that thing in the background and nobody needs to pay attention to you. And so that's been my career as a young person and as an older person in this. So to finally get the opportunity to step into something like this, where I'm like, oh, I hope this generation sees themselves in me, and hopefully the thing they see in me this time around is, yeah, you can be aspirational, but you can proudly still stand in from where you're from. And for her, it's Philadelphia. And that's really true for me. I never wanted to erase the Florida girl in me or the thing about me that's Southern. Like, I've always rebelled against that. I'm like, why can't this mean elegance and beauty and bright and smartness too? Why do I have to do standard American English like I went to Juilliard?
Exactly. We and our regular Black selves are elegance. We are grace. And in this dramatized version of the Banks family, there's a lot more tension than what we got in that comedy back in the early 90s. Things are getting very real. So what are you hoping to explore through your portrayal of Aunt Viv, as far as this tension and the family drama goes?
Before I even say that, the thing I really wanted to say is, when you enter a space and there's a Black woman there, you should assume that she's like Clark Kent, but she's actually Superman, okay?
Correct.
Absolutely.
You know, whatever space I'm in and I see another Black woman there, I'm like, she must have the craziest resume, because Black women are always you know, always are doing so much just to get the respect back. But I think the thing that's really important was that for Vivian's character and for this family was to see, like, what does it mean to become, like, the becoming of a strong family or the becoming of being a full fleshed out, fully self-expressed woman. And in a sitcom, you can sort of already be put together. Like the original Vivian, especially, both of them were already done. They're like, and I'm done. And so the archetype of Black femininity, even in this country, it always represents strength. If you put a Black woman in a magazine, she's going to represent strength, which I don't really appreciate that, because, you know, I'm also fragile. I am vulnerable. Mm-hmm. I am weak. I'm these things. And so I think that's what we want to see from Vivian, is this becoming of this other part of her that's been neglected. And the same is true for this family. All that glitters ain't gold. And just because they live in that house and they have, there are all these tensions that you have to deal with. And that's the becoming of who she still is, the becoming of Adrian's character, Uncle Phil. All these characters are in the mix of becoming who they were meant to be in life. And when people are becoming, it's like, I like think it's like that plant that somehow gets through the concrete. Mm-hmm. Ooh, you know how much tension it takes for that flower to pop through?
Yes. And Will showing up in Bel Air when the family already has so much going on, Uncle Phil's campaign and all that, clearly caused a ripple effect throughout the entire family. What do you think Will's impact is on Aunt Viv specifically?
You know what I love about Will showing up in this world is from the moment she sees him, not only does she embrace him, when he does or says or acts out his like Philly swag.
Uh-huh. Oh, yes. Yeah. She loves it.
She's just like, oh, there's that thing I've been missing. Oh, it's like a warm bath for the soul. So for her, he becomes sort of aspirational for her in a way. You know, it's like, oh, there's that resonance. And it's not that she lost it, but it's that she doesn't get to lean into that part of herself as much as she can, because she's a fish out of water herself, just trying to fit in. And also, you know, I like to think the first few episodes of Aunt Viv, I was really nervous that people wouldn't like me because she's such a cookie cutout paper doll image of like a Michelle Obama or something. She's just so trying to fit whatever the idealized idea of a Black woman is right now of excellence, but not her interpretation of what excellence is in her own body. So the funny thing is, the best advice you give to other people is usually the advice you need to have for yourself. It's projection. So when she tells him, like, show them that West Philly kid who has swag and talent, but at the same time it bounces back into her own face, like, wait a minute, who was I before I became Vivian Banks? Like, who was Vivian Smith again?
You welcome Will in, but you really had to navigate all of this tension between Will and Phil, you know, Will and Carlton, and also these feelings of resentment are brought to the forefront with your sister.
Just couldn't let me have this moment, could you?
For once. Please do not make this about our issues. Will is happy with his gift. That's all that matters. Let's drop it.
Not when you throw your money around to disrespect me in front of my child. I just don't understand you. How you got like this.
Like what?
Being successful, because that's what you're mad about. Because more of my dreams came true, so now you gotta cut me down whenever you get a chance.
Girl, your dreams came true because Mama supported you. Because I supported you. And then Phil supported you. You didn't climb no mountain. You were carried. And what I gave to you and now to Will, it ain't flashy or dramatic enough to be remembered or even given credit for. I am not trying to outshine you or deny credit. God, I am not your enemy. But you just got it fixed in your mind that that's what I am.
You know what's clear? What's clear is that before this fancy house, I was the one who helped you find your voice as an artist. When you needed materials, I bought them for you. I helped you move to LA, and I paid your bills. And the second you didn't need me, you erased me. You erased me from your life. You want my son to do the same thing.
How is it navigating that?
Woo, Viv and Vi, boy.
That is real. Yeah. I think I watched that episode, and I was like, oof. I know that part.
It's going to get even deeper in some of these episodes with my sister. It gets really real to the point where I'm like, this, people are going to be like, did they look at my own family? It gets very real.
Yes.
You know, I don't know if I say I want to, the navigation part, it's more like, I love this show so much because you could almost write a book to tandem it about, you know, how to, you know, some practical ideas on how to navigate family in general. And I think when it comes to Will, you know, what she and Phil are doing is very rare. There are not a lot of people who would open their house up to someone. A lot of us would be like, you know what? He did the thing. He need to be in jail.
Yeah.
So I think whether she knows it or not, a little bit of her even bringing this young man into their house might have to do with that she has survivor's remorse in her own right for getting out of Philadelphia, becoming an artist. You know, I think many of us who become artists and you become successful, you can have survivor's remorse because you see everybody else just doing that 9-to-5 thing and people complaining about their life and their job, and you don't get to complain in that sort of way. even though she sort of left and become more of this housewife, she still, it still put her on like a pretty comfy track. So I think she looks at him as like an opportunity to try to help elevate the part of her family that she left behind, no matter what. Like, this time we're going to do the right thing this time and bring everybody with me. And it's everybody's going to be him. And I also think having a young man, people just don't give young boys the same opportunity to mess up in the way girls get to mess up. Girls mess up in messy ways, but boys, you know, a young black man messes up, it automatically looks dangerous and violent. And obviously he wasn't a very dangerous, violent moment, but that is not who his character is in life. And so I just love that she's like, no, we're going to bring him in. I don't care what you think he did do. Who he is so much more. And, you know, as a woman, and even as myself, I'm quite clairvoyant, and I can see the best inside people if given the right opportunities. And I think that's her. And I think she also sees the big picture of how it could affect her own family. Of like, listen, this is exactly, you know, it's, I love, there's an interview I heard Will Smith say, and it hit me so hard. And then I heard Seinfeld say the same thing of, it's nothing like when you grew up without, but then your kids get to have everything and you forget that they didn't grow up where you grew up. Will and Jada both are like, wait a minute, so y'all didn't grow up in Philly and Baltimore? Yeah, y'all different.
I'm going through that right now.
Yeah, it's learning how to balance things. And when you enter into a partnership, a relationship, a marriage like that, there's a give and take, a balancing of roles and responsibilities. And then you add childcare into the mix and you have to learn to adjust all over again. And we get to see a lot of that with Aunt Viv. She's a mother, she's a wife, but she's also an artist. You know, she grew up in West Philly, very much from Will's neck of the woods, and now she's in this mansion in Bel Air. So she's kind of learning how to bring around this balancing act too. I know that you can relate to it, but how do you think she balances her individual self as opposed to being a member of this esteemed Banks family and the position that she finds herself in now?
I don't think she's done a great job of balancing it.
I think she kind of got swept up in the Banks identity. That's definitely my impression so far.
It's a complicated answer. You know, there's always one person in the relationship who's a dreamer. And I actually think Philip outdreamed her for a moment. I think he, you know, I have my own idea of how these people met, and I've told the producers this, and so I don't know if that's true or not, so I won't share it here to mess everybody's brain. But I, you know, there's a thing that happens when you meet the person that you fall in love with, and you fall in love with an idea, and then you fall in love with this, like, dream. And I think the dream he set up for her was the one that they live in now. He was like, I'm gonna be like the best lawyer. You know where I'm from? And I'm gonna be a lawyer, and I'm gonna get everything back for my people that they took. You know, I feel like he was like that militant, political-minded dude in a world where she was surrounded by airy artist people who are very philosophical and who think deeply, but don't think tangibly in the world and how it affects everyone. And I think she probably fell in love with all of that. And so she followed him. And also his world is anything outside of the art world, it can feel like it's much easier to chart a course to success. And so I think to be this visual artist, like, look, even still, I'm like, it's an acrobatic trick to be an artist of any kind, especially a visual artist, especially 15 years ago. And how do you convince your husband, like, let me keep doing this? Nah, I'm gonna follow your dream. No, your dream sounds practical. And so she lets go of that. So I think she let go of herself. And the thing that men don't get, I think, I say men and women, but we can't talk about me right now. Is if you allow me to let go a part of my dream, you're telling me to let go a part of my passion. So that means a piece of my passion has to go dormant. I guarantee you other things are going to go dormant in me as well. And so that's why, you know, the writers let me throw in this line about, look, I changed my hair for you. And I said, we got to say that because we're saying all these, I'm like, people need to know, like, she is fitting herself into his life.
This is one of the first times that I think this has really been portrayed like this, because everyone thinks that everything that glitters is gold. Like, no one understands the issues and the resentment and the things, you know, even down to the family dynamic that, you know, Will comes from a two-person family. You know, it's his mom and Will. But as he comes out to Bel Air and it's a two-parent household and, you know, it's a bunch of kids and cousins and relatives, you know, and he's trying to figure out, you know, how to navigate that. He's investigating his dad now. So to watch Carlton have his mom and dad from day one, you know, he's really trying to process that. But how does that family dynamic link to your character? Like, you know, what does that level of family mean to you?
You know, I feel a lot for Will being an only child to walk into a house full of so many kids. But, you know, again, I only have one kid over here. But from what I hear from my research is you can only take care of one kid at a time. So the other kids have to sit back and treat their own wounds while you take care and focus on one kid's wound. There's a good and a negative in that. And the good is, the best good is, and the most hopeful good is, that the other kids will learn what it means to have perseverance and leadership, how to actually take care of yourself. But the other part could be, you might end up teaching them what abandonment is and and what it means to disappear. And so right now she's taking care of the most important child, which is the one who is thrown in jail, exposed to high level violence. She's trying to take care of that kid and hoping that her other kids are so good that they'll stay on track. But the juggling act is never that simple. And I feel, you know, there's a lot of things you're going to see with Ollie, with Carlton's character. And I like to believe that people will watch this and have compassion for people who have more than one kid and understand that money does not keep your kid out of trouble.
Not,
you know,
at
they
all.
Still have got to learn. And I feel like, I kind of feel like, and we'll see how long this moment lasts in the culture, which is COVID, us being in COVID in some ways made us realize, like, we're all on the same playing ground. Like, we're all dealing with the same thing. It doesn't matter how much money you have, people. It's an inside job. It's not a bank account job we're talking about here. And so you sort of start to see that in this show, but it's very hard for her. And I think from the very first episode, you never see Vivian totally relaxed. And that is what it is to be a parent. But I think that's really what it is to be a mother, because dads will have these moments where you're like, do you act like you ain't got other things happening right now?
Right.
And for her, I really wanted to create a woman who constantly looked like she was trying to do the math of all the different people in her life. And it's a hard arithmetic. She never gets that arithmetic right. So I always wanted you to feel that in her.
Oh, man. I think I actually have even more respect for Cassandra Freeman than I did before we we went into this, which is wild to even say. I want to thank Jabari Banks and Cassandra Freeman both for being on the show. Next week, we'll be talking about the themes of identity and labels, especially LGBTQA+ identity labels, and coming into your own with Akira Akbar, who plays Ashley, and co-showrunner Rashid Newsom.
And check out the next episode of Bel Air streaming on Peacock next Thursday, and come back to the podcast every Friday to hear more.
Bel Air, the official podcast, is produced by iHeart Podcast Network and Peacock.
This show is hosted by me, DJ Jazzy Jeff.
And by me, Crystal West.
Supervising producer, Mike Coscarelli.
Producer and mastering engineer, Bahid Frazier.
Executive producers from iHeart are Nikki Etor, Anna Stumpf, and Miles Gray.
Executive producers from Peacock are Lindsay Vogelman and Amber Ferguson.
And special thanks to Will Pearson from iHeart and Michael Scoggin from Peacock.